back. If you've just joined us, you're watching StockWatch and tackling your questions in studio this evening with me are Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Greg Kassen-Illenbogen from Sanlam Private Wealth. If you'd like to send those questions to us, please do. SMS stock and the question to 41392, email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Derek, Greg, nice to see you both in studio this evening. We were talking about Turkey actually before we went on air, and I was reading we had a fairly difficult day on the market today, down 0.5%, although the Rand has recovered somewhat from, I mean, extraordinary lows hit overnight. And the Financial Times ran quite an interesting story today, and the headline was, "Emerging markets need Turkey to deliver a circuit breaker." In other words, Turkey's got to stand up and do something to stop this spiraling crisis. Greg, do you think they're going to? And if they don't, are we just going to be caught up in this vicious sell-off that may continue?
Well, that's the big worry. As we speak now, Turkey has, there's been no policy response from Turkey at all. They haven't raised interest rates. They've done, you know, there's been nothing except the president has stood up and said, we're not going to buy American electronics, saying this is a war on Turkey and we're going to find friends elsewhere and things like that. And that is a problem because it seems as though they underestimate the strength of the problem they have.
Yeah.
And if they don't do that, the only thing that's probably left to them is capital controls, and that will send a very bad signal to the rest of the emerging markets.
I mean, Derek, you know, perhaps you could explain why we would get caught up in this, and why Turkey's problems are their own. They've got rampant inflation, huge amounts of corporate debts, huge amounts of external debts. These are not our problems. So why do we get caught up?
Look, I mean, at the end of the day, we all fit into the basket of emerging markets per se. So, you know, it sends a message to how, and don't forget, Turkey is and was actually and still is a significant economy in terms of its standalone economic power, obviously in the emerging market space. So I think that all it does is it causes a contagion effect, and we obviously saw that blow out in the currency on the local currency on the Rand. And you know, it brings into question the doubt of, you know, how companies and the dollar denominated debts and how you're actually going to pay that off and the cost of that. And I think Greg's right. I think at the end of the day, what we need is concise certainty. Markets hate uncertainty. And you know, you're always going to see such irrational moves. Irrational or not, we can argue, but you are going to see such irrational moves until you get clear direction, particularly from Turkey, in terms of how they're going to counteract the moves. I mean, at the moment, we're sitting on a tit-for-tat trade war that has no conclusive sort of answer to what's going on the ground at the end of the day. So the fact of the matter remains is you've got a fast depreciating currency, and that's going to have a fundamental effect on the ground in that economy, and it needs to be dealt with. And you know, the leadership needs to give direction at the end of the day.
I mean, if we agree.
No, the big problem is that, you know, Turkish companies, because interest rates were so low and the dollar was weak, they thought dollar's going to remain weak forever and interest rates were low. This is the new normal, as they called it. So they borrowed and borrowed and borrowed dollars upon dollar. And now they have to pay it back. But it's a lot more expensive to pay back. And a lot of these companies will not be able to pay back their loans. And there's hundreds of billions of loans from Turkey, specifically to European banks, you know, the Spanish as well, the French, and Italy, of course. And Italy is a big worry because they've got their own problems. And at the moment, we're not seeing probably the effects we should be seeing globally. It's because it's the Northern Hemisphere summer, and a lot of people are on the beach and not at their desks. And when they get back at the end of this month, you know, I think, well, you can see from our volumes, you know, they're low relative. And that's the problem. And the ECB has said that they are concerned about the European banks' exposure to Turkey. But if they start, and what concerns me is Turkey's doing nothing about this except talk.
Yeah.
And you already have a serious non-performing loans, as they call it, problem in Europe. And Turkey could add to that, and now it's from outside the European Union. So they have the European Stability Mechanism that can pump in up to 500 billion, but it will send a negative signal to the rest of the world, and you could see markets react negatively.
Now, if you've been invested in Rand hedged stocks, you probably feel fairly comfortable if you're a South African investor. I imagine it's exactly the wrong time to go out and then sort of hysterically go and try and get your money offshore because, A, you're dealing with a Rand at sort of 14, well, it's 14, 20, 14, 30 now, or buy Rand hedged stocks. It's now the wrong time to be looking at them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what we've seen is a very strong knee-jerk reaction. You know, we obviously still need some certainty out of Turkey, but in an environment like this where you see in excess of 10% moves on our local currency, you know, that's probably a very short-term, unsustainable move. Again, on the ground, we also need to be cognizant of the fact that growth is very thin here. You know, it's very difficult to even look in the listed space and look for companies that are growing headline earnings per share, sort of mid-teen type growth. It's hard to come by. So, I mean, we do need growth to come online here. But to answer your question, I think the knee-jerk reaction is probably an opportunity to make sure that your weightings in the portfolio are in line and not too strongly overweight. So I wouldn't be chasing the currency trying to get money out and hedge against a depreciating Rand in a very short space of time.
Yeah. It's very possible that the Rand will improve and go below 14 again. That's quite possible in the short term. South Africa's financial crisis is still a few years away.
when it happens, not if.
No, it's absolutely when it happens. It's, you know, it's the simple thing is if you have your income and if your expenditure is more than your income and there's a limit to what you can keep borrowing to make up the difference, but that's subject for another time. But in the short term, the Rand can improve. But just bear in mind that if you had seen a policy response from the Turks immediately this happened, I'd be more confident that we'll see a sharp pullback in the Rand in the short term. But because Turkey are sitting on their thumbs and doing very little, I'm concerned that this volatility in the currency can still play out over the next couple of months.
Well, they're deliberately sitting on their thumbs. I think you're dealing with a slightly unhinged dictator, so not necessarily a reasonable man. But getting on to questions, Derek, you talked about finding stocks that produce or companies that produce double-digit growth in earnings, and there was actually one today, and that was CAP International. And the question is, what did you make of the CAP results?
Yeah, I actually think it was, you know, looking at the industrial space. I mean, hats off to the company and management for actually delivering quite a stellar set of results. You know, just very high level looking through it. You know, you're looking at a company that's sitting just under a 10 times forward multiple. And a forward dividend yield of 4%, give or take. So, you know, at a bottom line level, I think they actually delivered really well. And again, hats off to them. The only sort of worry or caveat that I'd have in it at this stage in the very short term is obviously that
Steinhoff holding.
So, you know, whether they need to raise further cash and place those shares into the market, it'll obviously be done at a discount. But maybe it runs further towards 8 Rand before that takes place. I don't know, but I mean, on the ground, taking that out the equation and just looking at the raw fundamentals, I think it was a stellar set of results. So,
Greg, I mean, is now an opportunity to buy? So you've got this overhang, this uncertainty, or this fear that Steinhoff will sell shares, therefore it's going to keep the share price depressed. But if you do look at a company that's growing earnings in a very difficult environment,
well, it's a rare bit of good news for Mr. Visser. So, you know, it's possible. But I'm concerned about the whole market going forward in the next 6 months. So, and as Derek said about, you know, whether they need to sell some shares, Steinhoff, that could put a cap on the price in the short term. So I wouldn't be rushing out there now.
Okay. If we get to companies that do have offshore exposure, there's a company on medical, also there was a tweet actually, asked, would the panel discuss the mid to long term prospects of Mediclinic and then back locally Mr. Price and Advatech?
Let's deal with Mediclinic briefly. So Mediclinic, very much like Woolworths, a bridge too far, spent 25 billion rand buying that Abrage business. Then there was problems with co-payments in Dubai that affected the business. Then they've been trying to increase their stake in Spire Health in the UK. That didn't come off. And then they had to restate some financials from their Swiss business, I think, a couple of months ago, their properties there. But a big problem for Mediclinic is that the Competitions Commission, when they looked into healthcare and hospitals, you know, they basically say that they're too few big players in the market. And so Mediclinic, Netcare and Life Healthcare, they don't want to issue any more licenses or let them increase the number of beds until their share falls below 20%. So I think the companies are engaging with them. But I think that's a big negative for them because it's going to limit growth on that. Yeah. So on Mediclinic, I'm not very optimistic.
Yeah. Derek, and I suppose, but then it puts them in this conundrum. So then this is why partly companies look offshore to do deals, but then Absolutely. They make bad deals, or they do deals that aren't necessarily bad in the long term, but in the short term take a lot of digesting.
Yeah, and in the short term, it's been somewhat of a perfect storm for a company like Mediclinic. So, and just go back and look at a company like Netcare when they basically took a decision to step back from their sort of offshore exposed assets and focus on what's going on the ground. The market actually quite liked that scenario, and you saw the share price rally. So again, it's the perfect storm for what's happened in Mediclinic. You know, where do they go to from here? I think there's a lot of headwinds that they've got to get past before you can conclusively say, okay, we're on track now to deliver, you know. And I think even within the Eurozone, you know, depending on what industry and how you focus, but particularly in the space that they operate in, there's a lot of headwinds that they've got to get past. And you've also got lots of currency volatility, which obviously can distort your results in a very short-term basis. But as you stated earlier, short-term doesn't really look good on paper, but if they can execute and get these businesses back on track, you know, looking sort of 2, 3, 4, and even 5 years out, then, you know, we could look back and see it as an opportunity.
But the other problem is, you know, they've got big business in Europe, you know, and it's not to say there's a very good chance that the euro will fall even further against the US dollar over the next year or so, and that could be another headwind. I think the one word to sum up the company is that they face a lot of headwinds.
Okay. What about AdTech? And we actually had Kuro results out today, which seemed pretty decent, although the interest costs are rising and they've had to put quite a lot of money into the Meridian asset that they bought. The question is on AdTech, but I suppose on the school group specifically. Greg, do you look at either of them?
Yep. So look, AdTech, you know, recently they had a fraud in their schools division that affected their results. But in the last set of results, you saw that their tertiary education business was outperforming the schools. So I would imagine that school business could also suffer from the effects of emigration. But the bottom line is that they bought a business now in Kenya from a London-based company. So they're trying to expand into Africa. And I think that's a good thing for the company because I believe, you know, incomes are rising in Africa. And someone north of our borders, same way that a parent in South Africa thinks they want the best education for their child and are prepared to pay for it, it's better. Because generally, and it's not limited to South Africa, but generally governments are not great at providing the best education. So I think that's very bullish for the stock going forward.
And I suppose you're picking it up at a fairly cheap price because there was a huge recovery in AdTech shares that lagged Kuro for many years, but now they've given a lot back. I mean, Derek, if you had a pick between AdTech and Kuro, would you pick one? Would you pick either?
So Kuro's obviously gone through the recent unbundling of Stadio and basically split that business. And as Greg highlighted, you know, a lot of the growth that we're seeing on the ground at the moment is falling into the tertiary space. So, you know, given the way that AdTech reports and you kind of see it as a group structure and you've got the tertiary side as well as the school sides inside that share price, I would probably say that AdTech is probably well placed, but it's a patient wait. I think, as Greg highlighted, you know, immigration is certainly going to be a factor on, you know, what they could potentially produce going forward. You know, you always got to look at these things going forward on the ground. But I still think that the tertiary side of the business has got some leg room to grow. So, and I actually like how they're positioned. You know, their brand, they've really delivered a very strong brand, and the quality of the education is well respected out there in the marketplace.
In AdTech?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
But in both of them, sorry, if you think, you know, the government is now promising people free tertiary education. But so you would think, well, there's no room anymore for these type of companies. But I can see, you know, it's going to be one of those promises that are going to take years to fulfill.
And backfire spectacularly.
Probably. And so I still see growth for these type. The problem with Curro is that the PE is very high at these levels.
And actually, there's a following question on Stadio, but I'll get to that after the break. And if you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us or email us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to international markets at the moment, starting off with the US. And it's pretty perky this evening. The S&P up 0.6%, the NASDAQ up by a similar margin, and the Dow Jones also trading about 0.5% to the good. So US markets shrugging off the woes bedeviling the emerging markets basket. Across the Atlantic, maybe a somewhat more lackluster performance from the FTSE 100 down 0.4% and the CAC off 0.2%. Still with me in studio are Derek Janser van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Greg Katzen-Ellenbogen from Sunderland Private Wealth, who were talking about AdvTech, which both of you like. So notwithstanding that the share price has come down a bit, but I guess it's a good entry level. And then there's a question on Stadio being the tertiary arm that was spun off from Curro. Can it follow Curro's positive performance is the question. Greg? I mean, Derek, sorry.
So we need to unpack how Curro got to where it is today. And obviously, Curro, as Greg stated earlier, is actually quite expensive if you look at it on paper in terms of the PE valuation. How did it get there? It grew by acquisition, issued shares, used its own share price as a currency to essentially buy these schools and to grow, and grow exponentially, and they executed it extremely well. We saw that unwind when the share price kind of went from 46 odd rand down to the 37, 36 rand level. So what was left from a corporate finance perspective, well, let's unbundle Stadio. Hopefully that can fetch a better elevated PE valuation and allow us to then implement the same formula. So to answer the question is, it all depends on how they do those acquisitions from a corporate finance perspective. And you need your share price to work for you to be able to issue those shares. And I mean, the chart tells you a story.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not allowing you to do what Curro did in the early days.
And again, it's a function also of the economic environment that we're in at the moment. You know, even in the listed space, to fetch high PE multiple stocks is very difficult. You know, growth is just not gaining the traction that we'd like to see within the listed space. And it's disallowing a lot of these high PE elevated stocks that sort of advocate to grow by acquisition to use their own share as a currency to grow. So I think that they've got to be careful. They've got to execute very strategically and be very selective over those acquisitions in terms of how they grow. In the tertiary space, there is still some room for growth, as we alluded to earlier.
Yeah, great.
Look, I think that the growth in private universities is a great opportunity in South Africa. I think they'll do well. As you know today, well, you will soon find out to send your school, your son or your daughter to a private school. Some of the top schools in Gauteng or the Cape can cost you 100,000 rand a year per pupil, some a lot more. And then currently it's a lot cheaper to go to university, but you know, because of, if the government gets bogged down in this free education for everyone in the universities, people will be flocking towards these private universities, and they'll probably be able to command a higher price like they do for private education. So my advice to you is start saving during that time.
I know. I'm thinking start saving and start buying lottery tickets like a mad woman, possibly.
The other point to raise in the tertiary space is also don't discount the ability to learn from a distance in terms of online modules and online learning, where you don't actually have to sink money into bricks and mortar to be able to achieve that paper at the end of the day. So I think if they're clever with that sort of online moduling, I think they can execute that space very well.
Which is certainly what owner PSG is involved. I can't for the life of me right now recall the company, but they are investing in a distance learning company. Mm. Which
the only problem with distance learning for youngsters is it will affect their social life tremendously.
I know. It's grim. It's grim when you really have to knuckle down and do the work. Okay, so perhaps we can get to Mr. Price later, but there was a question on the fair value of Sasol, asking for a conservative valuation, also taking Lake Charles into account. So Sasol is one of the beneficiaries of the Rand where it is at the moment. Greg,
well, look,
do you
mean,
have any
I can't.
Idea?
I'm not Sasol analyst, but I think it's difficult. We need to see Lake Charles coming on. But from what I've seen, that you know, the valuations are certainly in the high 500s for Sasol, and I can't give you an exact figure because it will vary amongst analysts. But I would say that the benefit. Just talking about Sasol, since the low of the oil price in 2016, the oil price in rands is up 124%. Sasol's up 45%. So, but you know, to give a detailed, I can't give you a value in terms of what's a fair value for Sasol. All I can say is that I do believe that Sasol is currently worth more than where it's currently trading, because I think Lake Charles will be a game changer for them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's been a lot of negativity around Lake Charles, so maybe that's why it hasn't rallied commensurately with the Rand oil price.
And every 10-cent fall in the Sasol, in the Rand dollar exchange rate, adds something like 100 million Rand to their bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, you've obviously got to unpack the two fundamental factors that determine this price, which is obviously the currency and the oil price. So, you know, obviously the oil price rally has been extremely favorable for a company like Sasol, but don't discount the impact that the currency actually has on a company like Sasol. And I think the depreciating rand has more of a gearing effect as opposed to the pure oil price per se. So, certainly the stars have aligned for Sasol, and it's been a patient wait. You know, to answer the question about a fair value, I think, you know, there's lots of moving parts. You know, the oil price can move very quickly. The currency, as we've seen over the last week, can move rampantly. And, you know, those are driven by external forces in terms of announcements from authorities and, you know, how that plays out. But where we sit today, I certainly think the fair value for Sasol is a lot higher, towards sort of the 580 mark.
Okay.
At the current fundamental valuations that we see today.
Yeah. Okay. There's a fairly interesting question on Green Bay Properties, and while maybe neither of you follow Green Bay extensively, there's a kind of a theoretical aspect of this question. And it is, Green Bay came out with interim financial results last week. And in these results, the following 3 points were made: that the NAV was 9.4 euro cents. The board stated that the share was trading below its NAV and that it intends to repurchase up to 30% of its shares. But the board has also sold assets to reduce current leverage. I find these statements extremely puzzling. Firstly, the discount between NAV and share price is minimal when compared with some other companies. And so reducing debt in an interest rate increasing environment makes sense. But why sell assets to achieve this if money is available to buy back 30% of the listed shares?
Well, look, I don't follow the company, but I can tell you, you only have to look to Warren Buffett. He will buy back Berkshire Hathaway shares, but at a discount to NAV. And I think that's the right thing to do. So if you're going to buy them back at NAV, it doesn't really make sense.
Or at a premium to NAV.
No, well, that's
crazy.
I would say
you
that's not
good. You want to issue shares if it's at a premium.
Of course, these are companies all traded at significant premiums to their NAV, Greenway being part of the resilient group of companies until things imploded earlier this year. Derek, your thoughts on the action, the corporate actions that they're taking, buying back shares but selling off assets, or on Green Bay itself as a potential?
So you know, just to answer that question conclusively, you need to obviously do a deep dive analysis into what are the assets that they're actually selling. And those assets may be fetching occupancy rates, let's say for argument's sake, of 60 to 70%, where those yields are, if you unpack it, are not as high as what they would like. And if you're sitting on a share price that's at a discount to net asset value, and you've got a strong pipeline of future projects that you believe can deliver forward yields of in excess of 10 to sort of 12% yields, then it becomes a sort of strategic management decision to say, well, let's offload some of the non-performing assets that kind of, you know, we've benefited through the J curve, buy back the shares and execute on the pipeline that we're trying to deliver. You know, my concern is, yes, it's embroiled in this resilient stable in terms of a lot of concerns around trading activities and sort of ethical behavior surrounding the companies. And there is an investigation that's underway at the moment, I think particularly on the Resilient Group. So I think I would tend to wait until there's some kind of an outcome and conclusive evidence that things are rosy going forward.
Okay. I don't know if I've got a very quick time for a thought on Tencent tomorrow, Greg. Do you have any anticipation?
Sure. If those results are not around 40%, then look out below, as they say in the construction site. I think I'm expecting decent results from Tencent, but we have to get our heads around the fact that at some stage, you just can't keep growing 45% per year, per annum, ad infinitum, at some stage. My concern is that the Chinese economy is slowing. And we'll see tomorrow what effect that is having on Tencent. The fact that the regulators getting involved in some of the games they were issuing and put that down. But I'm just concerned that I'm expecting decent results, but I'm wondering what the market's expectation is of decent, and that's the problem. But anything below 35%, then I would be very concerned in the short term.
And you don't have a stock pick this evening.
So I'm not going to, because I actually can't find anything that I think is worthwhile recommending that I know with a high probability that if people bought it, that in the next 6 months they could make some money. I'm concerned about the markets. I think we haven't seen the effect of what's happening. There's low volume in the global markets at the moment. The whole of Europe is on holiday. Things will pick up. I think this Turkey thing will still morph into something bigger. And so there are lots of speculative things that I could say, but I'd like to try and pick stocks that have a reasonable expectation to rise over the next 6 months, although the very next day they always go down.
But that's okay. 6 months, we're not that short-termist here. Derek, but you are looking at one at Disney, and actually Greg approved of your choice. Why do you like it?
Look, if you just look at Disney and what they're trying to do at the moment, I think this is a company, and compare it to something like a Netflix, which is really at a very high multiple at this stage. But I think that the way people are consuming content from a television perspective is obviously changing nature from TV on demand. So, the game around town is going to be content. And I think that if you just look at their content and the valuation that they're trading on at the moment, I think that they're sitting on some key crown jewels. You've got the ESPN sports component to the business, and you've obviously got the recent announcement in terms of the Fox acquisition, and that still needs to play out and, the deal needs to be sealed. But essentially what you've got is how they evolve this business and how they deliver that content to the consumer. And I think that although they've taken on significant debt, this is a business that's sitting at a very fair multiple and looking forward, if they can roll and execute what they're trying to implement at the moment, I think this is a great buying opportunity.
Yeah. Okay, we'll leave it there. Derek, Greg, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Derek Janssen van Rensburg is from Anchor Securities. Greg Katzen-Ellenbogen is from Sunlop Private Wealth. And we'll be back with Stock Watch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. I'm gonna go get some more.